Welcome to the Everyone's a Critic Movie Review Podcast. I'm your co-host, Bob Zarrell.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
With me, as always, is professional film critic Sean Patrick.
I am too smart. S-M-R-T. I mean, S-M-A-R-T.
And Josh Adams.
My wife, she is pain in my asshole.
Visit us at IHateCritics.net. We're on Facebook. Our Twitter and Instagram handle is Critics Pod. God damn it. I was thinking, don't say this one, and I said it anyway. Critics Pod. That's where you can follow us at all those places. Sean's reviews are there. Anytime we post a top five or something, which we haven't done in a while, it's there. Trailers and the 89 movies. Any other interactions, it's all there on our social media. Patreon, IHateCritics.net/Patreon is the best way to help support the podcast. Get yourself a credit on the show. We read all the credits at the end. And there's also merch at IHateCritics.net, and then click on the podcast merch tab. Get yourself a shirt or sweatshirt or pillow or bag, whatever you want. And if you have ideas for merchandise, let us know, and we'll try to get a shirt or whatever created for that as well. And then Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, all your podcatchers, we're there. Subscribe to the show, review the show, rate the show, and we'll read those reviews on the air. This week, we have one trailer, some disappointments, and then some more disappointments. Let's start with the trailer. They're all looking at me. Sean's remote. He's with us via Google Hangout or whatever they call it nowadays. Facebook call, is that what it is?
Yeah.
So if there's any technical
problems. Sorry, audio files.
Sorry, Jason. I'm just kidding. If there is any audio issues, that's probably why from either one of our ends. But we'll start with the trailer. Extremely Wicked, Shockingly Evil, and Vile. Is that the Zac Efron, Ted Bundy movie?
Yes, it is. It's premiered this week at the Sundance Film Festival and is getting incredibly good reviews. Obviously, he's playing Ted Bundy from the kind of the perspective of his wife, who's played, I believe, by Lily Collins. And it's not so much about it's about definitely how evil he is and certainly portraying that, but also about how normal he seemed or could make himself seem.
Yeah, and I guess you could say I get why they would cast somebody like Zac Efron in the role. It's a bit more daring for him than his usual choices, I suppose. And I guess that this story is popular enough, even with younger people, because now they've got Netflix to watch documentaries about him. But something about the trailer rubbed me the wrong way. I think it has to do with how it made him seem like a rock star. And I know he was kind of like a rock star then, but it just isn't something that I'm crazy about. Obviously, if it's well done and I feel that it's been recommended enough, then I'll end up seeing it. But as a trailer, no thanks.
I'm on board. I like the director, Joe Berlinger. He's a good documentary filmmaker, at least, from the Paradise Lost movies. He did that Metallica documentary. James Hetfield from Metallica is in the movie. He plays one of the police, a sergeant or something like that. I'm not really sure what. I mean, I understand what Josh is saying. I guess it depends on how they – if it's more from the media's perspective and how he's a rock star versus them trying to pull him off as a rock star – you know, it really depends on how they really pull it off in the movie, whether
well, like I was, or not. Like I said, though, this is from the perspective of his wife, for the most part, who tried very, very hard to believe that he wasn't guilty. She worked very hard trying to convince herself that he was not the monster that was being portrayed. And I think that's kind of the perspective that the movie is trying to take. As much as the movie is admitting and portraying him as evil, it wants to also understand her perspective of trying to believe that the man she loves isn't this monster that's been portrayed. So I find that part interesting. The thing that bothers me is that this plays into this really awful myth about about Bundy that he was a great looking, really handsome guy. He was charming. I don't know if he was ever that handsome. And I know that's a kind of a silly side note, but honestly, I think it's something that's been conflated in report after report about among the media laying up. I think it makes for a better story if we pretend this guy was a movie star handsome when he wasn't.
I guess you could say I always saw him as a cross between like Greg Brady and Tim Daly. Kind of like a everyman, rugged, handsome. You know, not movie star,
not
handsome,
Zac Efron,
like Zac Efron. Yeah.
In fairness, they do. They monster him up a little bit. I mean, he's not quite monster from Charlie's Theron.
Oh, sure. Anyone with that hairdo is a bit of a monster. So I understand.
Right. It was the '70s, man. Come on.
I was there for 8 months.
I was there for one. Yeah, but I mean, I'm on board just because of the director. I like. I'm one of the few people that'll defend Blair Witch 2, and and I like his documentaries. I don't know. I think he's got a good head on his shoulders, and I'm at least curious. Jeff Bridges has completely sold out with this Big Lebowski Super Bowl ad.
Oh, this is the worst. This is just the worst. I mean, just bastardizing my all-time favorite movie. And on top of that, co-starring with Sarah Jessica Parker, apparently in the role of Carrie from Sex and the City. How do you bring those things together? Who thought that was a good idea?
Two completely different audiences drawing in two different demographics. The ones that would never be caught drinking beer are finally going to drink beer now. And then the ones that were drinking that beer already are like, oh yeah, I'm a huge Lebowski fan. But I didn't even watch it once I heard that Carrie Bradshaw was in it. No, not even. I don't need to know that it would be very disappointing to see.
I knew it was a Super Bowl ad when I posted it, but at the same time, I was kind of hoping for a little more. And yeah, it's, I don't know. I think the Coen brothers should sue him.
Frankly, yes, honestly. This is what he's going to do with it. It's so disgusting. And I realize it's mostly about charity. It's about water.org and about promoting, you know, clean water around the world. I get it. Still, did leave my favorite movie out of it.
How does it feel, out of curiosity, to say that your favorite movie got bastardized? I'm saying that only because, as a longtime Star Wars fan, for a long time, that was my favorite movie, as well as like the Alien franchise, until it started really, really going downhill or making errant choices. How does that feel for you now?
I think, at the very least, I can look at it and say, at least there's no Big Lebowski holiday special.
Oh, touche, senor.
And then the MTV Movie Awards announced their nominations this week. The Oscars, I mean. There's no reason for Bohemian Rhapsody and Black Panther to be among the top. I don't know. They're MTV movies. That's the awards they belong in. They don't belong here. I don't know.
I think the actors branch of the Academy would completely disagree with you, as they gave Black Panther the SAG Award for Best Ensemble last night. And they are the biggest branch of the Academy, so this does make Black Panther actually a front runner for the Academy Awards, whether you like it or not. This is more than just a hit movie. This was a really great movie in general, and I think this is Hollywood recognizing that a mainstream blockbuster can also be a pretty incredible, you know, work of film. And I think this is an incredible work of film.
It's an okay. I mean, it's a good blockbuster, but it's still, that's where it ends. I don't know.
I guess if anything, they've nominated Black Panther for many, many different things, including Best Picture, sound design, visual effects, etc. But to me, really recognizing it would have been nominating Michael B. Jordan for a role that he was absolutely astounding in. It's my favorite performance of the year, even if I recognize that the movie is a blockbuster. I still really loved that role and how daring and in your face it was. Plus, I understand that you guys have both seen Vice. Sam Rockwell, you guys told me he was in the movie for like 5 minutes, and he's one of the supporting nominees. Why? We have this discussion every year about something that got missed. It's just in the fanfare to talk about Black Panther or even Bohemian Rhapsody, which has no business being Best Picture.
But even Vice would be something MTV would nominate for something like this.
Yeah. It seemed a little underwhelming in that there was some good stuff that really didn't get recognized. The First Reform should have been a Best Picture winner. A24
was like shut out.
Yeah, Eighth Grade could have gotten any recognition at all, and it didn't. So whenever these come out, we get disappointed more and more each year to the point where I think Bob and I are both quite ambivalent about it. He was first, though. but not recognizing Black Panther for the acting part, the part that convinced me to enjoy the film, not the visual spectacle of it, that's the part that disappoints me. You got to go all the way with this to recognize it as a real mainstream film as well as a blockbuster.
I think for me, when it comes to the Academy Awards, is that I've built up kind of a callus that I can still kind of not care, but tolerate it more than you guys, because I'm old enough to have been disappointed by The English Patient or Life is Beautiful or, these movies that were so terrible and did not deserve anything close to Academy recognition. I'm old enough to have taken those in and processed those disappointments over the years. And Forrest Gump, arguably, the worst of the worst crime in cinema history. When it comes to the Academy, I've got more of a callus for this level of disappointment.
I remember all those as well. I guess at least those were art house movies and not Bohemian Rhapsody. As much as it just seems like there's a lot of Queen fans, so they nominated for that reason and that reason alone. And
I think they nominated it for Rami Malek, but not the movie.
But nominate him only. I don't know.
I think that would have been a perfectly logical thing to do, just recognize his performance, I suppose. But the movie was so very popular, sometimes it just being popular and making a lot of money makes things seem like they should be a part of the best films of the year when they're really not.
And what I have noticed is now that we've done these 30-year-old movies, the more we look at what was nominated in the 80s, I kind of get it. So I shouldn't be as frustrated by it, but I guess I don't want to pick on Black Panther, but to me, I feel like it's being nominated more for not so much the movie, but for what, it was the first time an all black cast got to be, and that's not what you nominate movies for. I mean, you recognize that in other ways, not to me, that's almost more racist to do it that way. You wouldn't nominate Iron Man, and to me, this movie isn't that far and above any of those great Marvel movies. It's better than a lot of them, but not necessarily all of them. Winter Soldier, I don't know. You could really put all these on par, and to me, it almost pisses me off that it's almost more racist that they're doing it versus truly doing it on the quality of film. When I don't know if you're going to put it that far above every other Marvel movie, then that's one thing. But I wouldn't. I don't know.
It certainly seems to be a reflection. Correct me if I'm wrong here, Sean, but it seems to be a reflection, as you said, Bob. 30 years ago, we saw the same types of things being nominated, right, just in a different fashion. The Academy, Hollywood in general, is as progressive and as aware as they are sometimes. They go overboard in recognizing something just to do that, as opposed to thinking about the quality of the filmmaking, the quality of their industry, because it brings them more attention. There's artistry, but there's also salesmanship in there. And so it's not a new thing that all of a sudden frustrates us. We're just old enough to now recognize the frustration.
And to be honest, I shouldn't give a shit more than anything.
But what you're both recognizing, though, and I think, Bob, what it comes down to for you is what Malcolm Gladwell called moral licensing, where you take a symbol of something and conflate it into, hey, we did this, and now we don't need to do it again.
Right.
And that goes for it being both a movie with an all-black cast, but also being a comic book movie. So I think in the future, comic book movies are probably going to suffer for this in the future, if there are any more that are of this quality. They're going to suffer from the fact that the Academy can go, well, no, we had Black Panther. We're done now. We don't have to do that anymore. We gave you what you wanted that year. Now we're done with that. It's the same thing they kind of did with The Lion King and animated movies years ago, where they said, all right, well, we nominated your animated movie. Don't bring that up again. Here's your animated category. Now we don't have to do that again.
So really, we don't need to make the Oscars the gold standard anymore. We just need to make my opinion the gold standard.
Hey, at least on a few things. I believe
the Critics' Choice Award is the actual gold standard, if you'd like.
Well, okay. Isn't there a couple of different categories as well for Best Picture? So there's like comedy and musical and drama in the Critics' Choice as well?
Exactly. Yes.
Okay. And did they get it right? Did they put Bohemian Rhapsody in musical and comedy versus drama? Like, you know, I know this year the Golden Globes got a little goofy that way.
Bohemian Rhapsody got a Best Picture and was in the other categories as well.
Yeah. Okay.
Have you read Busy Phillips' book yet? I only ask because of the Critics' Choice Awards. She's won one award in her whole life, and it was a Critics' Choice Award for Cougar Town. And the creator of Modern Family happened to walk over and was talking to Courtney Cox and said, "Well, these awards don't even count." So.
Well, that's just somebody who's being bitter. I mean, if it was Stephen Levitan, he's always been bitter.
It was. And
he's just a bitter asshole all the time. So, I mean, just...
Well, he's mad his two girls didn't win. But again, I don't even know why that matters on a movie podcast. We'll get to our movies now. We'll talk with... I mean, we only have one kind of new one, but Sean, we'll start with a couple other ones to get us there. What do you want to start with? Drugs as a Weapon Against Us?
Sure. Drugs as a Weapon Against Us is a new documentary. It's available on demand now, and it's one of the worst looking documentaries I've seen in a long time. It's one of the laziest documentaries I've seen in a long time. It's rare that you see a documentary that sounds like just a trailer guide doing a voiceover of a series of photos for the most part. And then he takes pieces of other documentaries and just regurgitates them as if that's evidence of the point that they're making. The idea here is that it goes back to the 1960s and the notion that drugs like ecstasy or LSD specifically was introduced into neighborhoods and onto college campuses specifically to discredit the left. So you had the CIA taking LSD into they took people like Ken Kesey, who is one of the figures of that era, along with Dr. Timothy Leary, and they gave them LSD to then give out to whoever they wanted to give it to. And they protected them and arrested a whole bunch of other people as a way of kind of sending a message of getting the drug out there and spreading it around, but also using it to discredit the left as a political movement. And it takes this over time from the 60s into the 70s, when guys like Kesey were taking LSD out into areas of the black community, where they were using it to discredit the Black Panthers and planting drugs on them and getting drugs into communities where there are various uprisings going on. You know, you've got crack introduced into areas of Los Angeles. You've got figures like Tupac Shakur gets set up to be taken down by him being forced into working with Death Row Records, and Death Row Records having a bunch of CIA connected LAPD members as people who work for Suge Knight. Courtney Love is apparently a soldier of MK Ultra who tricked Kurt Cobain into taking heroin to make sure that they could neutralize him when they needed to in case he started to become a political influential figure.
Is the Illuminati in this?
Say what?
Is the Illuminati in this movie too?
Not much of the Illuminati. It's the CIA, MK Ultra, Timothy Leary, Ken Kesey, Tupac, that kind of stuff.
I'm kidding, but it just seems like after a while I'm starting to roll my eyes a little bit.
Right, I get it. It's very left wing, and we're kind of a left wing group ourselves. But this is so cheap and so tawdry, and so it's such a forceful narrative that it comes off as silly and cheap. And even if you agree with the political side of it, it still is something you can't agree with because it's just so silly in presentation and so cheap in presentation.
God, you got to be careful about the documentaries you watch online. My wife watched a documentary called Root Cause on Netflix, which pretty much is about how root canals cause heart attacks.
What?
Yeah. I looked it up and it's been discredited by every dentist and every expert in the field.
Wait a minute. Are you a tool of Big Dental, Bob?
Yes. But on top of that, the people they use in it are, one's not even a dentist. He like sold diet pills. The other two were dentists who lost their license. So, and one of them was from like the 1940s, and he tested his stuff. I don't know. Basically, it's just you can make anything sound.
But why did they take his license away? Because he was going to tell the truth.
Well, no, they took a study and used that years later, except for he had so much shit contaminated that his study is totally worthless. There was bacteria everywhere, and you couldn't really use it. But it's just, man, there's too many documentaries on Netflix, and you would think Netflix would be a more reputable company and look a little...
I mean, you can find that anti-vaxxer crap on Netflix, too.
I agree. What is neat on... Have you guys heard of the Fire Festival?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I've almost had a chance to sit down and watch that today,
but two different ones.
Didn't get it, too. I want to, though.
Hulu has one, and Netflix has one.
Yeah.
They're both worth watching. Because there's no real stance. It's just kind of like, look at this shit that happened. It's pretty phenomenal.
I love just the take that, hey, you know what? You got into bed with Ja Rule. You get what you came for.
Man, the guy behind it, Hulu actually got him for an interview. Netflix did not. But it's at least fun. Because on top of that, the people that were screwed over were rich millennials, so fuck them anyway. So
absolutely.
At no point are you really that upset. It's just kind of like, wow, this is kind of fun to watch on both ends.
Oh, the Schadenfreude is just beautiful.
And then you, at least you reviewed this movie, Dry Blood.
Yes, Dry Blood is an independent feature from a company called Dread Central that specializes in horror movies. And this is a pretty strong concept. A guy wakes up in a Los Angeles suburb in his car, doesn't quite know what he's done the past couple of days, just knows that he's been on a lot of drugs and he needs to get off them. So he's going to go up to this cabin that he and his ex-wife have owned for years, and he's going to try and dry out, and he invites a friend to go up there with him. When he gets there, he starts having these bizarre encounters with a police officer who's played by the director of the film, who's kind of all over him. He kind of reads this guy right away and sees that, oh, clearly this guy is a drug addict, and he's going to cause trouble in this town that's pretty much empty. It's a mountain town, and it's basically only full during the time when there are skiers. And so when there are no skiers around, this cop is kind of bored, and he's also kind of looking for something. So it all plays into creating this atmosphere of paranoia. He's convinced the cop is following him. The cop kind of is following him, but at the same time, he's also withdrawing from pretty powerful drugs. So a lot of the things he's seeing, he's not sure if he's actually seeing. And that leads to really fun narrative about a guy who is very confused about what's real and what isn't, and what has he done and what didn't he do. And it gets really creepy. He has these visions about dead bodies that are really, for a low budget feature, they did a heck of a job. There's one where this corpse of a little girl stands up and her head falls off and rolls towards him. And it's a heck of a good scare. And for, like I said, on a small budget, it's pretty impressive. Clint Carney is the star and the writer, and Kelton Jones is the director of the film. There are aspects of it that are, so low budget that you kind of roll your eyes at. And there are some twists in here that they're only okay. But for the most part, I really did like this movie a lot. And I do recommend it if you're a fan of horror movies.
Now, the head rolling scene, out of five, like, if 1 to 5, scale of 1 to 5, is it better or worse on the scale than Hereditary's head rolling scene?
Well, I mean, it's nowhere near Hereditary.
Okay,
I mean,
okay.
That's a gold standard, but solid. It's solid.
I guess my question is, how, having seen this documentary and then that movie back to back, do you separate the two? Because, you know, all I'm thinking is, did Ken Kesey give him the drugs? Why are the cops following him?
Yeah, he's a big time leftist political figure, so it's why this happened to him.
Serenity, the movie that Anne Hathaway said on her Instagram, Matthew and I are learning our film Serenity isn't easily broken down into sound bites. I really like movies like that, but just in case I'm in the minority, here are some reasons why I think you should see it. 1. I find Serenity to be thrilling, ambitious, violent, spiritual, erotic, charged, dark, damning, contradictory, maddening, lushly intelligent film from the brilliant mind of Stephen Knight. It asks a lot of its audience. It exists outside cut-and-dry black-and-white moralizing beyond the realm of thumbs up and thumbs down. It sucked. It was badass, etc. It will need some analysis and conversation after. Serenity is sexy, surreal, modern noir for grown-ups who are into things that don't come standard. If that sounds like you, I hope you'll consider in giving us your time and attention. Thanks for listening. Sean?
I'll give her the maddening part. It's certainly maddening. This movie's terrible. It is so bad, and it's bad from a good couple minutes into it. It's really, really terrible. Stephen Knight is the director here, who's also the director of Locke. So you know the guy knows how to direct a movie, but this is a script that should have been left on a shelf somewhere. Basically, Matthew McConaughey plays a guy named Baker Dill, who is a fishing boat captain in some Bahamian offshoot that isn't real. He's pursuing this giant tuna, and it's his all-consuming life's goal to get this tuna. Everybody on the island seems to know everything about him. There's a character that he buys fishing equipment from who apparently read the script for the movie, so she knows everything ahead of time and tells him everything ahead of time. Which that does get explained, but boy, is it a dumb explanation. Because everything about this movie is dumb. This is kind of like it reminded me a lot of an M. Night Shyamalan movie in many ways, because it has a big twist ending and it's a really dumb twist. But the thing that, you know, she referred to it as sexy. Ooh, is it not sexy? I mean, we're talking about Anne Hathaway and Matthew McConaughey, and I've thought those sex scenes were just like, ew. I mean, contextually, they're ugly. Their first sex scene that's supposed to be really hot and heavy follows her talking about the times that she's been raped and beaten in her life, which I'm not sure quite sure how that set the atmosphere. He then proceeds to essentially start it by as if he's going to assault her, which again, ew, wrong, don't do this, before she turns it around and makes it a little bit more, I guess, consensual. But it's a weird way to proceed with this scene. But that's a weird thing that this movie does throughout. Jason Clarke plays her abusive husband. She wants Baker Dill to take him out on his boat and drop the guy in the ocean for the sharks. I kind of wish Jason Clarke would get dropped with some sharks for real. Ever since that Planet of the Apes movie, he's completely forgotten how to act. He's just all over the place, and just I don't know what his motivations are. I don't understand what his approach to any role is anymore, because he's just all over the place. And here he's just bombastic and fatuous and uninteresting and drunk, which he's playing drunk in a way that is, you know, if you ask somebody at a party to pretend to be drunk, I think that's what you'd come up with is Jason Clarke's performance here. Really terrible film.
Yeah, I didn't get to see it. I really wanted to just so I could pretend to like it and argue with you. from what I've read, it almost looks like an intentional middle finger to the audience. Like, basically, that twist is supposed to be so... Did you see it, Josh?
No, but okay. I did read all about it.
It seems like that twist, there's no way you could do that twist without trying to piss the audience off. Which I don't know what the twist is, but that's what I've been reading in a lot of reviews.
I think the twist is intended to it's like an old person trying to understand young culture and like how those crazy kids in their video games work. And that's what it came off to me. And Stephen Knight is a, you know, older man. I think this, it really does play like an old person trying to understand how younger culture works in the twist. And it's such a dumb and dopey attempt at that. It really is like a dad joke noir.
Go on.
You just got Josh's money.
Well, reading about this, and I did find out the twist because I knew that I would never see this, not even close. And the twist, I'll give them this. It's so bonkers that they swung from the fence, from their feet for the fences. It would be like that one play where Vladimir Guerrero hit a home run on a ball that hit the dirt. So, like, he golfed it out a long time ago. I don't know if either one of you remember that. Such a long shot that, okay, you got to praise him for at least trying. It's at least original, but completely horseshit, too.
But he actually hit it out of the park. This is more like that one time somebody accidentally... He forgot to throw the ball, then it went like behind him, and it like lobbed in like Frank Thomas slipped out of the batter's box and tried to hit like a softball and missed. It's kind of more like that, or they just forgot to throw the ball altogether. I don't know.
Sure, sure,
but it still swung. I don't know.
Yeah, and anybody remember Mackie Sasser? That's kind of
absolutely Mets catcher batted left. Of course.
Couldn't throw the ball back to the pitcher.
No, he had a real problem. So did the dude. And so the character in Major League 2 was kind of based off of Mackie Sasser's problems.
Yeah, and that's kind of what this movie is. It's the Mackie Sasser of movies.
Well, I mean, you know, he had a good on-base percentage, at least for a catcher. You know, you could rely on him to get a base hit in a pinch. Now, you said Matthew McConaughey was chasing a big tuna. And all I could think of was Bill Parcells? No.
If you want a real groan, I'll tell you the name of that he gives to the tuna. The name of the tuna is Justice. Yeah.
See, all I read about it was that the twist basically switches genres, which to me I was like, oh, this is awesome. It's like that romantic comedy I want to make where the world ends and everybody dies. That would piss everybody off that went to see it, but I would get a kick out of that.
This is really a lot of really dumb wish fulfillment for the most part. I don't think, you know, you could call it ambitious, but really it's just a lot of dumb wish fulfillment. And that's really where it comes down to for me, is that it's really silly.
All right.
That's a shame, because like I said, Stephen Knight is a good director. We all saw Locke. Locke is a hell of a movie. The guy knows what he's doing. He wrote the script for Woman Walks Ahead with Jessica Chastain, which is a really solid film that a shame few people watched. So he knows what he's doing. He's taking such a big swing at trying to take something that was, you know, kind of old school noir suspense film and trying to young it up with some of the hip stuff the kids love, and fails miserably.
Well, I mean, the good news for all involved is nobody really notices aside from movie nerds, so I think everybody can walk away from this and maybe be okay.
I think the budget might notice. I think the accountants budget? Might notice.
Was it a big budget?
It was like 40, 50 million, yeah.
Oh, never mind. I didn't know that part.
Yeah, they're going to lose a good deal of money on it.
All right.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the main event for the linear, legitimate, and universally recognized Undisputed Classic.
The Undisputed Pedestrian movie this week is Serenity.
I will defend this as a modern sci-fi classic. Love this movie. This is based, of course, on the TV series Firefly, directed by Joss Whedon, his first theatrical feature directorial film. And it's the story of the Firefly crew battling back against an oppressive government. And really terrifically well-told story, wonderfully well-rounded characters, a great sense of humor. Wonderful action. I fell in love with these characters. I never saw the series Firefly. I never watched an episode. So I'm not, I was not somebody who was in the fan cult looking to love this. Even at the time, I wasn't even all that particularly familiar with Nathan Fillion. So, I mean, it was not, again, I was not predisposed to really love this as much as I did. And I bought into it immediately. I bought into all these characters. And getting to watch it a second time, I loved it even more because now I know who Adam Baldwin truly is. And watching him get knocked out and punched and hit in the balls repeatedly was just, oh, just made this movie just so much better. I really love this movie a lot. And I do think that there are touches of this that are better than most of the modern sci-fi that we get. Because the characters are so terrific and lived in and relatable and funny. This movie is really genuinely funny. It's got all those great aspects that that Joss Whedon is known for. Wonderful characters, clever dialogue, and some terrific action.
I'm going to go next, Bob. And the reason is I feel like me going third would be defeat the point. You know, my words would ring hollow after the discussion you and Sean would have. But I love this movie, too. This is the third time that I've seen it. And I watched the whole series Firefly back in 2010, where I was binging most everything on Netflix at that time, which was actually something you could accomplish. Firefly, the show, bored me to tears. Now, I like Nathan Fillion a lot. He's one of my favorite lesser-known actors that does get a lot of roles, but more of a TV guy, never having been seen as a cinema guy. And this movie, so I had low expectations for it, but I wanted to complete it because that's just what I do. Even if it's terrible, the whole series, I still at least watch Jigsaw, you know, just for shits and giggles, if nothing else. But Serenity offers all of the things that were bad about Firefly are not here, at least for the most part. They integrate in the show Western culture, Chinese customs and language and whatnot into this futuristic society. And that's different, okay? And it's an interesting projection on what he thinks the future would be. But it also meant that some of it was just a little too nerdy for me. The tone wasn't quite right, but the movie dials down all of those aspects. You can still hear in the score, they've got just a little bit of steel guitar in there at some point, okay? A little violin. They've got some of the language crossovers and whatnot, so that they can swear in the film without anybody noticing. But this does all of the good things about Firefly, which is characterization and development and story and interesting locales and whatnot. All of that is done very well here, compacted. And I don't think that you have to watch Firefly to like this movie. Everyone is at their best acting-wise here, and we don't have wonderful thespians except for Chiwetel Ejiofor, and I'll get to him in a minute, but the action is incredibly solid. Everything looks pretty decent, even in a couple of spaceship scenes that are a little on the borderline for me. This is what, if Lucasfilm knew what they were doing now, this would have been kind of like what Solo, a Star Wars Story, should have been, where you've got the lead guy, like Nathan Fillion is here, standing up for something, becoming more than who he once was, but also dealing with some heartache and whatnot in the process. As I understand it, Firefly came to Joss Whedon mainly because of how poorly his Alien Resurrection script came to be, where they had a bunch of pirates on a random ship, you know, smuggling things for people. This is pretty much what this ship is. Adam Baldwin is playing the Ron Perlman character, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But he took that and said, all right, I'm going to do that concept the right way. Serenity is the amalgamation of all of Joss Whedon's best talents to me on screen. Excellent writing, funny, lesser known actors that can actually give you something like the romantic tension between the mechanic and the doctor. Summer Glau is even bearable here, because normally I'm not a big fan of hers at all, despite her interesting fluided movements and whatnot. I'm a huge fan of this movie, and I too would defend it, but just not the show.
I'm not here to take it down, but let's you guys both said this. You came at it with no expectations. I've been sitting here watching and Flickchart this pop up, and I don't necessarily participate when this goes up against something, and it's always, I came in it with expectations, and when I went to it, and there's nothing wrong with it, but it looks like a TV, like a show from Fox. I mean, it still looks the same. The acting's very similar to TV acting. Again, not bad, but it looked more like it came from a TV show, which it did. And I kind of thought maybe, and I know you have to satisfy the audience that also demanded this movie too. So none of that was bad, but I mean, you compare it to Solo, yes, it's a better movie than Solo, but Solo looked better. At least parts of Solo did, most of Solo did. I don't dislike it. I was just kind of, I don't know, it was kind of like, I felt like when I showed Sean Who's the Man or something like that, where it's like, that's just a movie. That's kind of what I took away. There's nothing wrong with it per se. It didn't blow me away like I was kind of hoping it would, but it's also not my genre. And when you talk about, Josh just mentioned horror being the lesser genre for him. Sci-fi is kind of the lesser genre for me, unless something like Gravity comes out or something that's not even really sci-fi. It's just more space. But, certain sci-fi, when Blade Runner or whatever, just blows you away. To me, this is Blade Runner, even Star Wars Light. So I don't know. That's kind of where I'm at with it. I wouldn't put it on par with those movies. And I don't even necessarily like Star Wars, but... You know what I'm saying? I just think it's a level below those. But if you want to compare it to modern-day sci-fi, sure, I'm not going to argue with that.
Yeah, just what science fiction has become. And there's so much out there now compared to what there was when I was a child, for sure. And the 90s was populated with things that, if you liked it or didn't like it, it was just kind of overall, we didn't have Star Wars in the 90s until the very end.
Right.
I guess you could say it is comparing it to the last 20 years and saying this is really well made, because there's so many things that are so poorly made. But it's honestly, I'm thinking back on it now, the third time watching it, there's no fat on the movie though. It has a really nice pace to it. Everything that's said from these characters, it has a nice rhythm to it throughout the film. It's going to be hard. It's hard to defend science fiction as like some kind of superior genre, or to not just limit a film like this as science fiction.
Right.
And I think that's probably what you feel about horror movies sometimes too.
And I'm definitely limiting, not so much to science fiction. I'm limiting this to TV, because I could not get the TV feeling away from this movie.
I guess having seen the show, have you watched any of Firefly?
No. Okay.
Of course not.
What kind of question was that?
Have I watched any TV in the last 3 years?
You said that it looked like a TV show, so I was wondering if you had seen TV show.
It looked like a commercial for a Fox show.
Okay.
Which I believe this was a Fox show.
It was. And you know what, though? It looks so much better than the show. If there's a budget to be had, it's interior shots and some of the set pieces that they have of bigger cities in this film, they look okay. It's not terrible. To me, it's not sci-fi or TV level. It's just a step above. And when I say I really love it, I'm not comparing it to science fiction classics, be it Star Wars,
right.
2001, whatever the case may be. There's obviously an upper echelon of film, but in terms of an action science fiction film, this is right up there. I mean, there's even a little bit of gore involved, and that is something that rubbed my son the wrong way. I had him watch it with me. I kept telling him, if you don't like it, you can go in the other room. And at the end, he was really bothered by those reavers. So there's his first foray into that.
But I think to your point is, you're not comparing it to the upper echelon, and here I am watching you guys rave about this movie, and so immediately I'm putting it in there on my own, not meaning to, not probably shouldn't. And from that angle, it you know, if you're thinking Blade Runner, even the new Blade Runner, it would be a disappointment if that's what you're thinking about going in. Even to the point where there's a line in the movie that's it makes sense. It's not even a bad line. I can't even defend why I dislike it, but towards the end, one of the characters is like, I just regret not being with you, or something. If I had one thing, I regret not being with you. And she's like, sure. You mean sex?
Yes.
And I'm just like, to me, I'm just like, Jesus Christ, that's stupid. But I know that makes sense in context, but I still am taking that line and I'm pulling it out by itself.
Of course. It does make sense because her character is seen as
right.
something like mechanics intelligence, mm-hmm. which is different than his intelligence, and how do they come together, and she can't understand what she's saying. So it does work, but it, yeah,
I understand completely. I'm not arguing against that. It's still, it's hard for me to, I don't know. So I guess context also would leave at times for me. I don't know. But I'm not disagreeing. Go ahead, Sean.
I don't think you can compare this anything to Blade Runner. This is a different kind of sci-fi than what Blade Runner is, because Blade Runner is certainly a far more serious endeavor from beginning to end, whereas this is aiming towards something far more fun, far more along the lines of Star Wars. And I think it ranks really well against that, honestly.
And having watched this now after things like Guardians of the Galaxy have come out, and I'll only mention Solo because it applies here. It's kind of like a trendsetter in a way that I hadn't thought of. The Guardians' chemistry and their humor and whatnot is a step above in that they take it to another degree or whatnot. There's some silliness there that this doesn't have, but that kind of colorful arrangement of cast members and characters. This is 2005. You know, it's. It's kind of on its own like that. This belongs with Star Trek to me. I would put Star Wars even slightly above this, just for me.
I'll give you that. That was kind of where in my mind where I was putting it was with Star Trek. Not even the new ones, like the old ones.
Star Trek and superheroes, you know, and then I would put Star Wars slightly above that.
And I think you're right. I think, you know, you look at, like, I prefer Guardians, you know, and I prefer the look of Solo while I prefer this movie over Solo. I do, like, Guardians is really just a bigger budget version of this, I suppose. And I get it. And it's just more of where I was coming from going into it, I think is really what affected my opinion. Because I don't think it's bad. I just don't think it's, like, I don't know that I'll remember this. And again, I'm not a sci-fi guy either, so that's going to be part of why I wouldn't remember it. It'd be like you not remembering a really good horror movie. Or that's just okay to the masses, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, Hereditary is sticking with me. I mentioned the headless.
Does not belong in the same conversation as Hereditary. This is more like Strangers. Do we lose Sean? He's not laughing.
I'm here.
We just need to be funny first.
Damn it. <To laugh. laughs> any other thoughts on Serenity?
You can watch it without seeing Firefly.
Yeah, you got to watch it. It's on Netflix.
Yeah, it's on Netflix for, you know, whatever you're paying for your plan. But yeah, don't go in there trying to compare this to anything else. Just watch it for what it is.
Yeah, ignore the papyrus font that's all over the ship, you know, saying Serenity, that matches like a local spa that we have. ignore all of that silly stuff and focus on the film.
You did mention Chiwetel Ejiofor,
yes.
And then we never came back to
okay.
him.
Okay, yeah, and Sean, I'm sure you'll have something to say about it too, but his performance as the de facto villain in this one is calculated, but not comically so. He grounds that villain very well. Everything that he said is cool, and he acknowledges that he's a monster, but he wants to see a world without monsters, and this is the way to do it. That kind of villain has that Thanos logic that you've got to do something terrible to eliminate terrible. I think that he executed that very well, and if you'd had villains from the show in this, or something like that, or just Reavers, it wouldn't be the quality of film as it is to me without his performance.
He elevates the whole thing. He makes it so much more than just an adaptation of a TV show. That is a movie star. That is a movie actor right there who is really, like I said, he elevates the whole thing. He makes it feel so much more serious. Just by his presence, he seems to raise the stakes of every scene that he's in, because he's just that very good. It's a bafflement to me that he isn't a major movie star, because effortless charisma, effortless presence, and he takes a movie I think I would have enjoyed even with a lesser actor. I would have looked at it more like Bob's looking at it, like just a TV adaptation. He makes it so much more because he is that good.
He's definitely the highlight of the film for me as well. I don't disagree with that at all.
The fight choreography of this too, I wanted to bring that up as the last thing that I'll mention. From River, Summer Glau's character, and all that she does with her movements and her ballerina-like assassin character, to the fighting with Chiwetel Ejiofor, it's choreographed, yes, but it seems so much more natural in this movie. I see so many action films in which there's long drawn out fights that don't mean anything, or it's so like Avengers Age of Ultron, Joss Whedon, I think it matters that we should bring that up, where you've got the Hulk and the Hulk Buster going down a building and you have no idea about the physics of the scene. It's martial arts, but it's very brutal, exact, sudden martial arts. And I'm noticing differences in action much more these days for whatever reason. The Chris Pine Scottish film, that one, the violence to me was so much more sudden. And it matters how you film that. Joss Whedon's got a really good handle on how to film action scenes for the most part. Age of Ultron, not included.
Well, and take that scene where she, near the end, where she's battling the Reavers by herself. That scene, I mean, she's done this. That scene has been stolen from this movie repeatedly in the 14 years since this movie came out. That scene has been stolen repeatedly, where they try and show off a character, most often a female character, in a badass way. They ripped off basically the entire Resident Evil franchise. Could have been influenced entirely by that scene, just copying it, or even, you know, the Underworld, for that matter. I'm not sure about the timeline, but I mean, this is a far better version of that. And you're talking about, you know, Kate Beckinsale and Mila Jovovich are arguably bigger stars, but Summer Glau is so much more convincing and realistic in that performance than either of those two in those really shitty movies.
I'm with you all the way up until one particular movement that River makes, where she does a backwards sword gesture, and that was, it stopped me for a second because I remembered to myself, there's a movie with that scene in there, and there's a woman doing it. And then immediately I was like, oh yeah, 2 years prior to this in Kill Bill Volume 1, the bride is doing a backwards slice of a bunch of people. That move alone is, I think, lifted, but the rest of it is very delicate and easy to follow and brutally violent. I love it.
And yeah, the Underworld and Resident Evils are before Serenity.
Yeah, and I only saw one Resident Evil and one Underworld. Oh, yeah, I was done with that.
Regardless of that,
she is so much more convincing in that portrayal of that physicality than either of them are in those other shitty movies.
Agreed.
Anything else on Serenity before we move on?
Since this is Aunt Bethany's 80th Christmas, I think she should lead us in the saying of grace.
What, dear? Grace! Grace! She passed away 30 years ago.
So 30 years ago, we had, what,
six movies?
Six movies.
Yeah, I'll start from the bottom and work my way up to something at least worth talking about, mainly because I saw it. The Felix the Cat animated movie. I don't ever remember seeing this or being interested in Felix the Cat. Either of you?
I remember hearing about it, never saw it.
I was under the impression, or I was given the impression that it was some kind of edgy, R-rated sort of thing, and I don't know, it didn't appeal to me.
Fair enough. Number five, Cohen and Tate. Now, I'm a fan of Roy Scheider for many reasons, and so something like this interests me, as did 52 or 57 Pickup from 1987-88, and I never got to that one either. And it seems to me that he plays the cop in a lot of films over time, including Jaws, of course, that we're aware of. But he, along with Adam Baldwin, are in this film. When a little boy witnesses a mob hit, he is kidnapped by two professional assassins who are not what they seem. Now, there's nothing about cop in there, but the video cover made me feel like Scheider played a cop for some reason. Either of you seen this one? It made like no money.
But if Adam Baldwin's getting hit in the balls, though, I'm all for it.
I like that you said that. I too, after knowing more about Adam Baldwin since the last time I saw Serenity, seeing him, get nailed a number of times, including an arrow through the calf, that was pretty awesome.
Didn't you get in a Twitter fight with him, Sean?
I did. Yeah, over gay marriage, and he was horrible. And I like seeing him get beat up.
And he's not one of the Baldwins, right? He's not even like a cousin or a distant,
I don't think so. He might be related to
Steve. No, he's not related.
Okay. Another one that I could have swore, just reading the title, I would have thought that it would have had that guy from American Ninja in it that we keep trying to get on the show, Michael Dudikoff. But No Retreat, No Surrender, Part 2. I don't know if he's actually in it or not, but the cast that I saw, Cynthia Rothrock, which I've seen that name pop up in various B films from the 80s, I haven't seen it, but it involves Vietnam again. And if there's anything from 89 that we can go to, it's Vietnam movies and water monster movies. And this is yet another Vietnam film.
I don't know why we keep going on Michael Dudikoff and not Chuck Norris. I mean,
that's the one. Society is taking care of Chuck Norris. Okay. We need to take care of Michael Dudikoff and make him just as popular for the wrong reasons.
There's another No Retreat, No Surrender next year, and just in case you're worried about missing out on this.
I would have to watch all of them before seeing that.
The same part two, or is it just like a totally different movie with the same name?
It's hard to say. I don't see it. Cynthia Rothrock doesn't appear to be in No Retreat, No Surrender 3, just as Jean-Claude Van Damme was not in No Retreat, No Surrender 2.
Oh, so it is a sequel. Okay, never mind then.
Yes, another one that I could have sworn that I saw this in the 80s.
I have seen it.
Parents, with Randy Quaid and Mary Beth Hurt, and it's directed by Bob Balaban, a guy who you might not know by his name, but if you looked him up, you'd say, oh yeah, I remember that guy from, you know, whatever it is. But it's... The description is disturbing, and that's what caught me on to, hey, I think I've seen this. A young boy living in the 1950s suburbia suspects his parents are cannibalistic murderers. There's no way I haven't seen this. It's bringing back some sort of flash, but probably I didn't enjoy it enough to ever revisit it.
The reason I remember this movie is because it became a punchline with my friends. I don't remember – what I forget is who rented it. But whoever did got shit, and it might have been me for all I know. I don't think it was, though. But whoever it was got shit on for the rest of our high school years. Because anytime someone would suggest a movie, someone would just go, parents, you're not choosing. You chose parents. We're not. This movie is. It for a while was my least favorite movie I'd ever seen.
Oh, so wow.
But I mean, you're talking my teenage years.
Well, it does invite that interesting idea from another film. Was it Nicolas Cage and somebody else? Nicole Kidman, was it? Oh gosh, where the parents ended up like killing the
mom and dad, Selma Blair,
not Nicole Kidman.
Nicole Kidman with Selma Blair. I
yeah,
that movie is phenomenal. Maybe Parents is good. As a teenager, I hated it.
Ah, okay. Sean, have you seen Parents?
No.
Okay. We'll move on to Physical Evidence. Now, the only reason I suppose this bears mentioning, because out of all Burt Reynolds' films from the 80s, most of them seem to have a font that is slightly italicized to indicate action and drama and some sort of drugs and sex, whatever the case may be. And maybe this is the reason why Burt Reynolds had to have a comeback, because he made films like Physical Evidence. It's directed by Michael Crichton, the novelist of Jurassic Park, you know, the Andromeda Strain, etc. But I have not seen this either. It also stars Teresa Russell, famously of Black Widow.
I haven't seen it.
Nope. It's got a very typical title.
It's bad. It's really bad, actually. And it's not Burt Reynolds at his best. Burt Reynolds is, you know, really charming and funny. And when he tries to be the tough guy, especially at this point in his career, after having been back in Deliverance, it kind of worked. But afterwards, after he's done, you know, the Cannonball movies, after he's done the Bandit movies, it becomes much harder to take him seriously as one of these badass characters. And that's part of the problem with this movie, is that I grew up on Burt Reynolds in Cannonball Run, the goofy guy. And so when he's trying to be the badass guy in Physical Evidence, or a couple other movies that he's doing, where he's trying to be Sylvester Stallone, it just never worked for me. And this one was really hard to watch.
Yeah, this reminds me of a couple years ago, I watched Stick, which was an Elmore Leonard adaptation, and okay, that got me interested in it, but I could never buy Burt Reynolds as this really tough loner guy. It didn't work. He didn't have the same machismo of a movie that's just a completely throwaway action film, like a Stallone film or a Schwarzenegger film.
Well, and he also thought Boogie Nights sucks, so what do we do?
May he rest in peace. the one that I did watch from 89, when it says comedy in the description, I'm thinking, oh, this could be fun. Nick Nolte has been fun in comedies before. 48 Hours comes to mind. Martin Short has been funny before. That's two different energies together in a film. So Three Fugitives is the film I'm referring to. In the first 5 to 10 minutes, I was on board, because Nick Nolte is the guy that's getting out of prison after having been there for 5 years, and he's ready to start his life. He's gone into the bank to either deposit something or take something out. He's dressed in a nice suit, and then the bank that he's at gets robbed by Martin Short, who's got a very compelling reason to do this bank robbing. Now, the irony of a guy that's just trying to start his life out, and then, of course, the police hear the bank that he's gone in, they think that it's him robbing it. There's a wonderful comedy of errors film that could be born from those first 5 to 10 minutes that is completely checked out after that. And it's really disappointing on the whole, knowing the principles involved, what this could have been, and then it turns into something that's maybe a little too dark to be a comedy, a little too serious. Martin Short's trying to keep his little girl who doesn't speak because of traumas. I mean, it's a whole lot of films going on at one time, and it should have stuck to being a comedy. Anyone else?
I never saw it.
I saw this movie about, something like 10 times from like 1990 through like 96, just because my mom watched it whenever it was on TV for some reason. I think she had a crush on Nick Nolte. And she was a big fan of Martin Short, so she really loved it. I barely even remember even having seen it. Like I said, I've seen it maybe 10 times, and I barely remember it other than beyond the title and the premise, which kind of tells you all you need to know about it.
Yeah, there's a film from, I think, 1982 or 83, and involves a younger girl with two vagrants called Savannah Smiles. Now, that movie is really good, and I have good memories about that compared to this same dynamic where you've got two older men and a younger girl caught up in a bunch of mistakes or whatnot. But this one has no idea which lane it needs to be in. And I remembered the title, I remembered the stars of it, so I definitely wanted to see it this week. Unfortunately, I probably should have gone with something else.
Well, there's also a movie called Three Amigos that knows its lane as well.
Yeah, which is a wonderful, wonderful film.
Which you would have thought, I thought maybe this was a sequel, I don't know. Apparently not.
It didn't have the exclamation point at the beginning at the end, so that's how you can tell the difference.
Gotcha.
No.
Anything else from 89 before we move on? Okay, then. Next week, we've got one new movie, Miss Bella. Is that Bala. My handwriting sucks. So we're going to do a streaming challenge, I think. And our classic is Itu Mama Tambien. It's on Netflix, so if you want to watch that with us, you can. I think I know what movie I'm going to stream, if anybody's interested already.
Sure,
I'm actually going to pay a little bit. I've been wanting to see The House That Jack Built for a while, the Lars von Trier movie.
I've heard. Me too, but it's been like $6, and I'm like, I don't know if I want to throw $6 at it.
I don't know. I heard it was really fucked up, and you know how much I liked fucked up, so I'll watch that one.
Lars von Trier. All right.
I've heard scenes. I don't know. I heard another podcast talk about it. I'm just like, really? They do that in this movie? So I'm like, I gotta see this.
Wait. So you've seen the Neon Demon, and you're still? Oh, that's not the same guy, is it? Never mind.
This is an Antichrist. The
Melancholia.
Yeah. Yeah. He's kind
of Dogville.
Yeah. So I'm curious about that one. So I might pay a little extra money to see it. Plus, I think I was going to do it anyway.
So. I'm not sure, but I'm wondering if by the end of this weekend the new Jake Gyllenhaal movie. Yes. I think that one might be out this weekend.
You're right. It comes out the 1st of February. I saved it to my list and just happened to see the trailer for it yesterday. So
I'm definitely going to be watching that one.
And I think I'd like to try and watch that one, too. Right now, I'm leaning towards something that, if it's a film, I think I'll watch it. I can't tell if it's a TV show, but I do think it's a film. It stars Anthony Mackie. It's called Io. At first, I was calling it 10, and then I realized it was a capital I and an O as opposed to the letter 1 or the number 1. So I'm going to try that one. It seems to be interesting, and it's science fiction, and it's kind of, I guess you could say, up my alley.
It makes you feel better. My kid has been playing this game on the iPad. He calls it Gangster IV, Gangster 4. But apparently it's really inappropriate, so he can't play it anymore. I wasn't really paying attention, and then my brother goes, yeah, he said he went into the stripper club. So I asked him what the stripper club was, and he didn't know. He just knew of it as a stripper club. So like, let's just not play this game anymore. And then he's like, well, you let me watch Deadpool. Why can't I play the game? I'm like, shut up.
You catch it there.
So he still plays the game.
Oh, Josh. Oh, yes. Josh. Poor Josh. This movie is at 30-something percent on Rotten Tomatoes, and yeah, that does not look good.
Are you talking about Io?
It's at 4.7 stars on IMDb, though.
Oh, shit. Well,
out of 10.
I did not.
Out of 10.
I didn't check out any reviews. I just noticed Anthony Mackie, who is, you know, generally reliable. I like him. And a science fiction-based setting. Io, of course, is a moon of Jupiter. That part gets me really excited. But if it sucks that bad in advance, I can choose something else. There's plenty out there.
I wish you luck.
But yeah, that's next week. I don't have anything from 89 in front of me, so we can deal with that later, unless you know off the top of your head.
I know there are things, which is nice. As
the
opposed
thing
to
comes
the
out
before.
Next week. 30 years old. Even though I know that came out way earlier. All right, well, that is our show. Before I let you go, I want to thank our Patreon supporters. And if you want to be a Patreon supporter, head over to ihatecritics.net/Patreon to get yourself a credit on the show. We'll start with our key grip level, Charlie Messing and Jason Bryant. Our character actor is Josh Paul, Christina Cato, and Cousin Jeff.
I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Our special effects level, Corey from IVNV and Sarah Morrell.
May the force be with you.
Our associate producer, Jason Mollett.
Everybody has to eat shaving cream once in a while.
And our movie stars, Uncle Jeff and Dave Sievers.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Again, if you want to get a credit on the show and help support the podcast, ihatecritics.net/Patreon is the best way to do so. Also, you can buy our merch at ihatecritics.net and click on the podcast merch Atlas from TeePublic, where our site is at. And then obviously subscribe to the show, write and review the show, share the show with your friends, help us grow the audience. Otherwise, that's our show. We'll see you next week.
That ought to do it. Thanks very much, Ray.
And we're the three best friends that anybody could have. We're the three best friends that anyone could have. We're the three best friends that anyone can have. And we'll never, ever, 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 ever leave each other. We're the best three friends that anybody could have. I mean, the three best friends that anybody could have. That's right, the three best friends.
I have no idea how well this will work, but we can do a couple really quick. Training Day, Monsters, Inc.
Monsters, Inc.
Monsters, Inc.
I agree. The Chronicles of Riddick, Jackass the Movie.
Chronicles of Riddick.
Agreed.
I haven't seen either, so we'll just go with that. Last Action Hero or Pocahontas?
Oof. Last Action Hero.
Agreed.
Memento or Master and Commander, The Far Side of the World?
Memento.
I will go with Master and Commander.
Memento, even though I don't like that guy anymore. Corpse Bride or Ice Age 2?
Corpse Bride.
Corpse Bride.
The Painted Hills, 1951, anybody?
Nope.
No, I don't think so.
Young Guns 2 or WALL-E?
WALL-E.
I haven't seen Young Guns 2, but based on my information from Young Guns 1, I'll take WALL-E.
The movie that Serenity ripped off, Underworld or Gone with the Wind?
Fishing with Gandhi.
Oh! I will take Gone with the Wind.
Gladiator or Beetlejuice?
Beetlejuice.
I'll say Gladiator just to make sure we don't conjure him.
Jesus Christ.
Oh my God.
Beetlejuice. I mean, I will always kind of hold Almost Famous against Gladiator. As much as I kind of like Gladiator, okay. I can never truly forgive it. The Goonies or Star Trek 2009?
Star Trek.
Star Trek.
I'll go with the Goonies, but I don't mind Star Trek. Bruce Almighty or X-Men The Last Stand?
Bruce Almighty.
Bruce Almighty.
Mm-hmm. 12 Monkeys, No Country for Old Men.
No Country for Old Men.
Agreed.
Hell's Angels on Wheels, 1967, anybody?
Nope. No.
Aliens, god damn it, Knocked Up.
Knocked Up.
I know that this is clearly predetermined, so Aliens.
I'm sorry. I really like Knocked Up. I realize that Aliens will go down as a bigger classic. Longest Yard, Angels and Demons. Adam Sandler, Longest Yard at that.
Yeah, Angels and Demons.
Fishing with Gandhi.
I'll go the Longest Yard just to reset it. Billy Madison or Captain America, the Winter Soldier?
Winter Soldier.
Agreed.
King Kong 2005, Beverly Hills Cop 87, Cop 2.
Beverly Hills Cop.
I will go with Beverly Hills Cop 2 as well.
Me as well. 10 Things I Hate About You, Harry and the Hendersons.
10 Things I Hate About You.
Oh, yeah, that's what it is, but it's... No, Harry and the Hendersons sucks. it's charming only in its nostalgia. Yeah, it's the other one, 10 Things.
I kind of like 10 Things I Hate About You. At least I
really do, yeah.
Amadeus or Spider-Man 02?
Amadeus.
Amadeus.
Yeah. The King's Speech or The Thin Red Line?
The Thin Red Line.
I'll go with The King's Speech.
I have seen neither, so I will just hit reset. Water for Elephants, Tomorrow Never Dies.
Water for Elephants.
I don't think I've seen the Water for Elephants thing. But it's got to be better than Tomorrow Never Dies. That's a really bad movie.
I haven't seen either, so. Apocalypto or Shanghai Noon?
Apocalypto, you said?
Yeah.
Shanghai Noon.
I'll go with Apocalypto.
As will I. From Dusk Till Dawn, Chasing Amy.
Chasing Amy.
Chasing Amy.
Black Swan, Wayne's World 2.
Black Swan.
Black Swan, easily.
The Ring, Patch Adams.
Oh. You get your wish, Bob. That's The Ring. Patch Adams is, oh my God, what a movie.
I've already used my Fishing with Gandhi.
The Ring is to PG-13 horror movies what Serenity is to modern sci-fi. I think.
Oh, there's a case to be made for that. I agree. Legitimately. It's going to lose anyway, so just take The Ring and leave me alone.
So Josh picked Patch Adams.
Mark this date. Somebody actually chose Patch Adams.
Beethoven or Conspiracy Theory?
Conspiracy Theory.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's see how the internet... Oh, Love Actually or The Abyss?
Love Actually.
Love Actually.
Sure. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest or Airplane?
Cuckoo's Nest.
This is a case of which one I would rather watch, and that would be Airplane, and that's no offense to the other film.
That's Cuckoo's Nest. Notting Hill or Cool Runnings?
Notting Hill.
Notting Hill.
This is a case of what I'd rather watch. Cool Runnings. Big Galaxy Quest.
Big.
Galaxy Quest.
It's big, even though I like Galaxy Quest. Fast and the Furious or Top Gun?
Fast and the Furious.
Top Gun.
Fishing with Gandhi?
The funny thing is, Top Gun is probably the Fast and Furious of its time.
I was
going to
say, they're pretty much the same movie, just right. In a different era. All right, last one. Starsky and Hutch, Road to Perdition.
Boy, that's tough. They're so different. Starsky and Hutch is hilarious, but Road to Perdition is pretty incredible. Road to Perdition.
Agreed.
I'll go Starsky and Hutch.